Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
What did I do?
Turn around! Put your hands on your head!
It's been 7 months since I gave that answer, and they have done nothing but attack.
And this isn't my words. This is actually coming from the Joint Committee on Taxation.
The letter that you wrote to me, Mr. Brown, was, in, you know, I don't want to...
Blah, 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 blah.
Burn in hell.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast from the El Pacifico here, where the weather's been just... Oh, man. You see those waves today?
Are you kidding me, man? The best shape that I've ever did see.
It's a pretty nice shape on those waves, but... You know, we're working, baby. I work for a living, man. I got no time to hit the surf, but it was pretty sweet. And, of course, till 4 o'clock on the East Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show where reality is our bitch. Reality is the bitch on this show, and... We go through the looking glass of talk radio, media, and the world. 877-876 is our number. 877-876-PHIL. I always forget to give the last four digits.
Yeah, what is it with you anyway?
I don't know. Maybe I'm, it just proves that I'm not such an ego case that I love hearing my name. 877-876-PHIL is our number. Coming up, we have news on a deputy who tased a guy six times. Six times. And boy, did this guy deserve it. Wait till you hear this tape. Obama, the president, has mourned the loss of those soldiers at Fort Hood. And coming up this hour, we're going to be talking with Dr. Ron Tarner from the Mountain Meadow Observatory in Colorado on the Boston subway driver who stopped just short of running over a woman on the tracks there of the Boston subway system. It's an incredible story. If I hadn't seen the video myself, I wouldn't have believed it. In fact, we've linked it on our Twitter site at twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show. That's our staff-maintained Twitter site there, twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show. Go over there. Take a look at this link of this Boston subway driver so alert that she saw the woman on the tracks, saw the people waving her to slow this thing down and get it stopped, and by God, she did. And I'm telling you, you're not going to believe it. She got this subway train stopped, bud.
Well, I mean, it was part of way on top of her.
Yeah, almost like ran her over. But a little bit of the subway train was like over the woman's head. She's just laying flat on the tracks. So it's just an incredible story. I want to also remind you that every night on our website, we are airing live streaming video of the show. That is philhendryshow.com. You can go over there and take a look at our show as well as listen to the show. We have live streaming video as well as live streaming audio on our website, philhendryshow.com. Visit us over there. And like I said, check out this link on twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show. Let me get Dr. Ron Tarner to join us this evening. Dr. Tarner, how are you this evening, sir?
Very well. Thank you, Phil.
And tell me, the study that you just got done authoring, and I know you authored this with a couple of doctors there from the University of Indiana, and this has to do with the lobes of the brain. I don't want to get into a whole lot of really technical stuff, but it has to do with that trigger that some of us will pull and some of us won't when it comes to irrational behavior?
Well, Bill, first of all, it doesn't really have to do with the trigger so much as it is a screen or a limit that is indicative of restraint. This is all having to do with the cerebral cortex, the frontal lobe of the brain. What causes us to stop before we do something that is illegal? What causes us to stop before we do something that is violent? What causes us to stop before we do something immoral? That was the study, and what we concluded was that for most of us, we have a series of neurotransmitters. These are chemicals that will allow us to allow our brain to communicate from one cell to the next. And when those are in good biochemical balance, we recognize those areas where we will consciously stop our activity before it becomes destructive to somebody else or destructive to ourselves. That is when we are biochemically balanced. What our study was endeavoring to achieve was, is there ever a time when we can override that for our own survival? Now, I don't mean that would we kill to protect ourselves. Of course we would. But would we kill unnecessarily to extend our lives or to extend our health or to survive? That's why this story in Boston was of great interest to myself and Dr. Feidman as well. And I know you read some of it, Bill. I know not all of it.
Well, I haven't reached that point in my life where I can read these medical studies the way you can, Doc. But let's talk about this Boston story, because you think that this is a case in point. Now, this is a Boston subway driver who's being hailed as a hero after she brought her train to a screeching halt to avoid hitting a woman who'd fallen onto the tracks. Her name is Charisse Lewis. She's shrugged off the praise. This happened on Friday morning. She got a radio call from a fellow Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority employee, Jacqueline Osorio, who was standing on the platform at North Station, and she saw this woman tumble, and other people were waving her to stop, and she did indeed stop, and did so in as rapid a manner as possible, and saved the life of this woman that had fallen onto the tracks.
Absolutely. It is something that is praiseworthy. Now, here is where our study takes a different look. This woman had an opportunity, and she didn't take the opportunity. And let me tell you what I mean. She had the opportunity to override that limit on her brain that would tell her, stop the train, you're about to run over a human being. She could have overridden that and continued on as the conductor of the train, as the driver of the train, and run over that woman, and she would not have been arrested, number one, because it would have been the fault of the woman who'd fallen onto the track. And number two, we believe that this would have extended her life physiologically, because what we're finding in our study is if you will, get away with an act of aggression that is so extreme as to take another life, and you are not forced to pay any penalty for that, that this actually can have a conducive effect on physiology. And what that young lady, her name is Charisse, I think you said, Phil?
Yeah, the driver's name was Charisse, I believe it's Charisse Lewis. Are you saying that she should have continued on and run that woman over?
That's a matter of conscience. What she should have done and what would have been the best thing for her to do may be two different things. What she should have done, in her mind, she should have stopped. What would have been the best thing for her to do? The best thing for her to do would have been for her to continue to run that woman over. She had an opportunity.
Why do you say the best thing?
In that instant, she would have recognized a rare opportunity. This is a once-in-a-billion opportunity for human beings to express real aggression and not have to pay any societal penalty for it.
What if she wasn't feeling aggression?
Well, we all have aggression, whether it is in the consciousness, whether it is in our subconsciousness, or whether it is in what we now know to be the superconsciousness, or that part of the mind that extends beyond the mundane. We all have aggression, and we all need to get that aggression out. We all have a fair amount of stifled aggression and stifled anger. All that does is fester, and in many of us, creates a condition where cancers may grow or other diseases or other maladies. But here you have a woman, if she were in touch with her aggression, she would have seen a rare opportunity to do something good for herself.
All right, I got to stop you, though.
As well as do something good for her family.
I got to stop you, though. She might have been doing something good for herself and her family. What about the woman that she's running over?
The woman fell onto those tracks by virtue of her own act, Phil.
But what makes us human? What makes us human is our ability to recognize another human being in peril and to help them, right?
I don't know what makes us human. I would disagree with you. What makes us human is our ability to continue to grow and our ability to continue to evolve. Our ability to survive, that's what makes us human. And Charisse Lewis, or whatever this woman's name is, if she'd been more aware on that Friday morning of last week, she would have seen a golden opportunity that few human beings have in their lives. And that is to actually... And I want you to go with me on this, Bill. Don't interrupt me, and then I'll answer all the questions you have. The opportunity to kill another human being and not have to pay any penalty and at the same time, get whatever portion of aggression that would be associated with that act of killing, get that to the surface and get it purged, and quite possibly extend her life by 10 to 15 years.
Why do you say 10 to 15 years?
Because the kind of aggression that you're purging, that is the aggression that it takes to willingly run over an alcoholic or whoever this whoever this was on the railroad, to run over this alcoholic, that is quite a deep feeling and can extend your life 10 to 15 years. I guarantee you.
All right, now let's talk about something before we take a break.
But I have a message for your listeners, if I could. If you could get away with an act of aggression like murder, when an opportunity presents itself, you should do it. It will be therapeutic. It will be invigorating.
No, wait. You said murder. Do you mean killing?
Well, I mean, no. What I'm saying is what was presented to this young lady on that Friday morning, where she had every opportunity to run someone over and not pay the penalty.
Well, that's not murder. That's an accidental killing.
Okay. You know, you could call it anything you want.
Although it wouldn't be an accidental killing, would it?
Well, yes, it would be. But you and I know, and the audience, no, it wouldn't. In actuality, no, it wouldn't. But you know and I know that's what they would think it was.
Well, all right. I'm going to ask you a question here. Is it murder? If that woman saw that woman on the tracks and she thought, boy, I'm having a lousy week.
Well, maybe she's not having a lousy week. Maybe she just knows this would be a wonderful place for me to get my aggression out. And if this is a woman, and you have to take into consideration a lot of hormonal questions. The joke is, well, if it is her time of the month, she's going to be able to access that aggression a lot more readily. But one can easily see a woman who is experiencing a particularly difficult time of the month accessing that aggression readily and accelerating that train right over top of that woman. And when they finally bring the train to halt, she has been able to effectively purge that portion of her aggression, and nobody's going to arrest her for it.
Is it murder?
Why do you keep bringing that?
Because she knew that she could have stopped the train.
She didn't know that. She didn't know that at all. She might have hit the brakes, and maybe it didn't stop the train. What's the difference between hitting the brakes too late, or just flooring it? There is no...
That one of them, when you floor it, you are intending to run that person down.
Maybe, and maybe you're intending not to hurt anyone in the train by bringing it to an abrupt stop so that people would fall forward and injure themselves. Think of that one. You see, there are different ways of looking at this, but it all points to the same thing. The lady who was driving that train the other morning missed a golden opportunity to...
Yeah, a golden opportunity, you're saying, to purge some aggression and just keep that train rolling forward.
It's a once-in-a-million event that does not happen, as I said, once in a million. We have to be aware of these, and we have to take advantage of these. That's what our studies indicate in every way.
Dr. Ron Tarner joining us. I don't think I'd be able to do that, even if I was aware that it would extend my life 15 years or whatever. Dr. Ron Tarner joining us on the woman who was driving that subway train. It would have been better for her and for her own personal health had she went ahead and just floored the train right across that woman, because she wouldn't have been blamed for killing anybody.
They would have thought it was an accident.
877-876-PHIL is our number here as we talk to Dr. Ron Tarner about Clarice Lewis, the subway driver in Boston who slowed her train down and saved the life of a woman who'd fallen onto the tracks as a result. Dr. Tarner says, had she floored it and let the train go right over top of that lady, it actually would have been better for Ms. Lewis. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
I'm going to go get a Coca-Cola.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, as we talk here with Dr. Ron Tarner about the subway driver, Clarice Lewis, in Boston, who was at the wheel when that woman fell on the track. So you're saying that was a one-in-a-million opportunity for Ms. Lewis to press the accelerator, run that woman over, kill her, because that moment of aggression that she was able to purge would extend her life.
That is our study. Now, it's also, Phil, worth noting that in our studies we talked with some 250 women who had lost their babies as the result of falling downstairs or some other mishap. Very tragic in the minds of I would say, 99% of us. And yet, in our studies, some of those women reported an invigoration, an almost extension psychologically, whereby when they tripped and fell down these stairs, in some manner they tried to land on their stomachs so as to continue the injurious fall.
You got to be kidding me.
No, these are all things, you know, when you're a scientist, Phil, you don't trouble yourself necessarily with the shock value or the emotional aspect of it.
Because I have to ask you, how do you morally justify looking at somebody laying on a railroad track and flooring it?
Phil, I'm a scientist. I your questions of morality are nothing more than anchors. They weigh down the very vital research that I'm doing. And I have been surrounded by people over the last 5 years who have tried to slow down or to destroy much of the research that I've been doing. And I'm losing patience, really, with these people and their ant-like addiction to morality.
Well, but it's a consideration.
Yes, it's a consideration. But my work is very important in this area.
All right, let me take a phone call. 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Ron Tarner with us. Let's go to Jack. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Tarner. Go ahead, sir.
Dr. Tarner, exactly where did you go to school? Did you go to school with Dr. Jack Kevorkian, by chance?
Very funny, Jack.
Yeah, of course.
If you really want to know where I went to school, I went to California Institute of Technology, if you've ever heard of it.
No, never heard of that.
And I didn't think so.
Where exactly are these studies published saying that physiologically, by acting out some aggression, that it would extend your life?
Have you Googled my name? Yes, there is. And you haven't Googled my name. Because it's published under my website.
Okay, under your website, you're the only one. Okay.
That is exactly correct. I link the study, sir.
Wait a minute.
Why do I have to talk to a pea brain like this? Is he going to listen to me or not?
Well, hold on for a minute. The gentleman's asking a question.
No, you asked me a question. I'm going to answer your question. Okay. Yes, I'm going to answer your question.
Okay.
And it's linked on my website at the study.
I should start a website and put up the fact that I'm printing money for the United States government. And
no, you can't. Not if you link a university.
Now,
not if you link a university.
Well, you guys aren't listening to each other.
University.
Why?
Okay,
why do I have to deal with a man who won't listen to me?
I've never had a peer review by the AMA.
Just because you say that doesn't make it so.
All right, are you guys listening? Are you guys listening to each other or not?
I tried to answer the man's question, and he wouldn't shut up. So I don't know what you want me to do.
Okay.
Well, what was your question, Jack? What was your question?
His question was, where was it published? And I told him that it was linked on my site to the various universities where those are published.
Okay.
Yeah, shut you up, didn't it?
No, it did not shut me up. Here's my thing.
Yes, it did shut you up. Yeah, it did, because it was dead air for like 3 seconds.
Okay, that's fine.
Good for you.
I could put a website up and link to five universities and come up with focus studies. But there is no evidence whatsoever saying that an act of aggression would extend somebody's life.
I just told you where you could find it.
I've been 17 years as an emergency room physician, and I've never heard of a study like this.
Okay. So, in other words, you have a bucket. In other words, you spent your time with a bucket and a mop. And what else?
That's not fair.
My time with a bucket and a mop?
that's what you guys do, right?
That's
you
quite insulting,
after,
sir.
You mop up after
that
the people die.
That is quite insulting.
You,
all right, look,
Jack,
that was not...
After they die, you mop up.
That is a trauma because
you
of an act of aggression.
All right.
Not
you
because
know. You
of
bop
the
up
act of aggression.
You guys have been talking
wife.
To your wife.
Phil Hendry.
All he does is bop up.
Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. On the line with us is Dr. Ron Tarner, who has published a paper on the desirous effects or the life-extending effects of allowing aggression to assert itself in a way that is legal and in a manner that will not have a person's freedom compromised. And you were talking about the Boston subway driver. She could have run that woman over legally.
Yes, and Phil, before I continue, I want to say, pursuant to the gentleman I was speaking with, I am published in the National Journal of Resource Psychology. That's the National Journal of Resource Psychology. And there are links provided to the different universities that I have associated with, and I'm talking about some of the greatest minds in behavioral science. My work is too important to be impeded by these small minds that have blocked my way for some 15 years. The work...
Well, I understand that, sir, but going beyond the professional considerations... This subway driver, you're saying, should have run that woman over.
It would have been a legal act. No one would have found her at fault. She would have been able to express a reasonable amount of aggression, that is, running over a human, an alcoholic, and if you want to place human beings on a stratum, if you will, and I don't want to do that, and I don't think anyone would, but if there is someone out there that wants to, well, I'm sure you would agree that an alcoholic that has fallen onto a subway track, that is somebody who, in the parlance of the street, is asking for it.
But again, we have this question of morality.
And again, I say to you that my work is too important to be impeded by these ants that have stood in my way with their ant colonies, these scientists. If that is something, Bill, that morally... causes a person to stop, then I would suggest something that presents itself every day. What about a dog or a cat running in the path of your car? An ugly dog or an ugly cat, because people seem to respond to cute animals in a manner that would restrain them. So if an ugly dog runs in front of your car, what's to stop you from flooring it? And that moment extends your life in terms of the physiology and the physiognomy, by at least 6.5 years.
Running over a dog.
Again, Phil, the tone of your voice is one...
forgive me, Doctor, if I'm responsive to these moral considerations, but I am.
My work, while you want to wallow in this morality, my work is impeded. My work that has been going on for 15 years by these ants in the scientific community.
Again, you have these professional considerations, sir, that I understand, but I'm talking just as a regular human being. You're telling me that I can extend my life if I run over a dog or if I just let an alcoholic fall on some subway tracks and go ahead and floor the subway, that it's good for me. I can't ignore the morality that I've been raised with.
You have to burn new neural pathways in your brain and not let these insignificant small minds, and they know who they are, and they have been very critical of my research and my work, these little men who will never be anything, you can't let them dictate what you're going to do.
877-876-PHIL. We're talking with Dr. Ron Tarner on the on the advisability of that woman who rode that drove that subway running that woman over on the tracks. Dennis is in Boston. Dennis, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Dr. Ron Tarner. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Phil. How you doing? I enjoy the show.
Good. Thank you.
I just want to call and let you know that I'm a truck driver that lives up in Boston area, and I know somebody that killed somebody that was driving. And it affected him seriously. He never wanted to drive again. And I think it would affect me personally, myself. I couldn't. I think it would have a hard time.
Well, were they laid right in the road?
There were. It was an accident. The guy hit the car, and the lady died.
That's different. That's different. I'm saying when an opportunity presents itself, like someone's laying in the road, and you're on the road, you're in your truck, and there's a body laying there. Do you swerve to avoid it?
Of course he would.
No, I want the gentleman to answer the question. Do you swerve to avoid it?
You try to avoid it if you can. You do what you can, but you don't...
Wrong. Wrong.
Get in that.
Wrong.
What do you mean wrong?
Wrong.
If he's in a truck and he drives over a body, that could cause his truck to crash.
Oh, but now who's worried about morality? Now you're worried about yourself, aren't you?
And swerving, you swerve hard enough, you can lose control of the truck anyway.
You run them over. If you run them over, and you do so with that split second of clear conscience that it would take, in the research that I've developed, even in the face of these scientists who have laughed at me and have tried to have my licenses revoked, you would experience something that could extend you physiologically, as well as physiognomy, a great many years.
Well, personally, I think it would affect me for the rest of my life, knowing I killed somebody.
It would affect you for the rest of your life by extending your life.
Yeah, and what if this man's life is extended by the fact that he's feeling guilty about it?
The gentleman's name is Dennis.
Yes.
Don't let the little binds that have impeded me impede you.
Your professional considerate. I'm sorry, Dennis, go ahead.
I think that it would just affect me for the rest of my life, and I don't see how that's going to add time to my life.
Dennis, I'm telling you that if you could find it within yourself to go ahead and floor it and run that guy over, you would feel so much better about life.
I don't understand how that works.
Why do I have to answer the questions of non-professionals? You're a non-professional, right, Mr. Henry?
Of course.
And so is Dennis, correct?
He's a truck driver.
Then why don't you guys just take my word for it? I'm a doctor, and I have had to fight not only the disbelievers, but the professionals in my field that would tear me down. I'm a volcano surrounded by ants.
Sir, again, your professional considerations, I understand, but we're just two laymen trying to understand this.
Well, then understand this. If you two men could divest yourselves of that much conscience for at least 5 seconds to go ahead and floor it and run that drunk over on that track, because let's face it, that's exactly what we're talking about, nothing more, nothing less, you would extend your lives by 12 years.
Well, this man said it, and I'm saying it, too. It would be a very, very hard thing for me to do. Dennis, thank you. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Nola in Chattanooga. Go ahead, Nola. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
Let me see if I can explain this. I understood the running over the person and that with no consequences, and you have the choice, and you make the decision.
If you can do this without conscience, because understand, the woman that was driving that subway train and or operating the subway or however they put that, it would not have been her fault had she run that woman over.
Right, and she could have hurt passengers if she had locked up the brakes.
Exactly.
People around in her life.
So why not weigh a doubt against the certainty and accelerate over the body?
But here's
man,
my question.
I don't know, man.
Then you have these shows that you see, and I realize that it's all like reality TV. You have these Wicked Attraction where the couples kill, and they're really turned on by that.
Yeah.
But what?
No, no, no. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking. My work extends beyond that.
Let the lady finish. Yes, ma'am.
This is my question. Once you make that conscious decision and say she steps on the throttle, how do you keep from getting, like, the God complex and think that you can control who lives and dies and stop yourself from doing it again?
Because you already have that break in your mind. Your biochemistry is already well balanced. I'm saying one step beyond. If the opportunity presents itself, it is a conscious decision which, if you will, releases the governor on that biochemistry for however many seconds, allows you to make the decision to purge that aggression, run the alcoholic over, and be done with it. See, these are the questions that I was asked at, and you're asking a very good question. I asked, these same questions were asked of me at the last symposium we did, and I stormed out of the conference room. I was so insulted by these ants.
Oh,
you understand what I mean by an ant?
You.
Yes. No, you're not insulting me. I'm surrounded by ants in the professional community because my work, it must go on.
So you're saying, doctor, in other words, that if we make that conscious decision and we're healthy people, we will return to our health?
Until the opportunity presents itself again.
Presents itself? When are you ever going to have the opportunity? You even said it's one in a million.
Absolutely, it's one in a billion. So chances are it won't, unless there's an ugly dog or an ugly cat on your street. But that's not going to extend your life. A dog, you could run an ugly dog over, and what's that? About 6 months?
So you're saying that it's more like a release valve. Once you release that pressure.
Hey, you know, that makes you smarter, Nola, than 90% of the behavioral scientists in America, in North America. You are smarter than them. Do you understand that? Do you understand what I'm saying? You are smarter than 90% of the behavioral scientists that I have been dragged down by and that I have been assaulted by over the last year.
All right, Nola, thank you for your call. I appreciate it very much. Good question. Thank you very much, dear. Let's go over to Suzanne. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Ron Tarter.
Very smart woman.
Thank you for taking my call. You know,
yes, ma'am.
About over 10 years ago, I was a passenger in a car where the driver made a decision to hit a dog rather than swerve and miss the dog, even though no one else was on the road. And he could have safely swerved and missed the dog. Maybe he thought the dog was ugly, like your guest believes that ugly dogs could be run over. And I have to say that I have felt so, even though I wasn't the driver, I have felt so guilty all these years, and hearing the sound of the dog's body being hit and slammed by the car.
You see what's happened?
That has taken years off of my life. And
it's taken years off of your life because you weren't driving the car. And you've allowed that individual's morality to infect your own.
Humans have a consciousness.
I
can't believe that people who make a conscious decision to deliberately take the life of someone else are anything other than psychopaths.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying when the opportunity... If an alcoholic's laying on a railroad track, what else are you going to do?
What do you mean, what else are you going to do?
You are devaluing and judging someone else's life. And that first of all, the woman on the subway, driving the subway track, didn't know that woman was an alcoholic. And I don't think...
Well,
that,
I think it's... If you're driving a subway, man...
If it was a beautiful dog or a model on the railroad track, you shouldn't kill them? I mean, listen to
I didn't say anything. I said,
and your adjective.
You're driving... Ma'am, if you're driving a subway train and there is a woman splayed out on the track, I think it's a pretty fair bet she's an alcoholic.
No,
now,
there was
that's
somebody from
one.
Australia whose baby carriage pushed, or from another country, and her baby carriage got out of her control and fell down onto the track. And
what?
So would it be okay to hit a baby?
You didn't hear, doctor. You didn't
baby?
Hear about that?
Did I hear about a baby doing what?
It was a baby carriage that, a baby carriage that got away.
Oh, all right. Now, let's be clear. A baby carriage, you don't think that woman's a drunk?
Why?
The
baby carriage got away from her? Come on. You know that's a drunk.
It was on a video camera, and she turned away, and the baby carriage rolled down onto the track. It was on TV. So would it be okay
to run over
a baby? I mean, you're
going to hear about
ugly dogs
and alcoholics. All right, well, let me ask you what happened.
Ugly dogs and alcoholics. You're judging people. And you're trying to people do have a conscience, and I don't
think
you can. The baby was
the baby hurt?
No.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, so, you didn't know that. What, I mean, a train is going to run over a baby carriage. How do you know it's not going to hurt the baby?
You're encouraging people to do psychopathic things.
No,
and,
I'm not.
And then get
I'm
away with it, thinking it's going to extend their lives.
No,
and the
no,
other man who called you and questioned the research was a doctor, and you... And I'm an attorney, and I don't know what NOLA is, but
he's
people
a doctor.
Are calling you
if
are intelligent,
if that guy's
and you call
a doctor,
them amps. You have an arrogance and a God complex yourself where you think
exactly.
that you can just be,
yeah.
you can just
and
say
I,
people
I,
can kill other
I
people.
Wanna ask a, yeah, I want to ask a question here, Dr. Tarner. That train, that driver on that train that ran over the baby carriage, are you saying that man's life is now extended?
If he made the decision, well, it's a baby carriage, there's nothing I can do about it. Let's have some fun, not let's have some fun, but let's go ahead and floor it.
If he made the decision...
Was the baby hurt? No. Why are the two of you questioning work that I've been conducting for 20 years in the face of ants? Yes, I said the word ant, and I meant it. The man
because
who called,
I think
the doctor...
You're giving people an excuse not to try to avoid
yeah.
taking a life, whether it's an ugly dog, an alcoholic, or a baby...
If an ugly dog runs in front of your car, what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to get out and put a bonnet on it?
Why couldn't you have just said a dog? What if it were a poodle?
Because
what if it were a pedigree? Why do you have to use words like ugly and alcoholic?
Well, it's because it's easier for us.
You're devaluing life.
Yes.
Yep. Mab, it's easier for us to go ahead and floor it if you look at it, a dog that... is obviously Heights 57 variety. Go ahead and floor it. Now, if you're looking at a purebred... That's worth money.
It's okay.
Oh, come on, man. What difference does it make?
It's okay for Hitler to kill people that he thought were less important than his Aryan race?
No,
I mean,
if you look at how stupid Hitler was... No,
I don't know.
Maybe
it's surprising he
killed
himself. You would have thought
Hitler killed
into his life.
Yeah, what about that, Doc?
He killed Jews who ran the banks. Thank you. It was a stupid thing to do.
Oh, I see. So maybe killing the gypsies was okay.
Look, I know what the two of you are trying to do. You're trying to drag my research down into the mud.
No, we're trying to heighten your vocabulary.
She laughed.
Maybe if you didn't.
She laughed at me.
Maybe if you approached your vocabulary differently, it
can
would
I ask you a question?
Perhaps give
where
you some
you,
more credibility.
Where do you get the right to laugh at me?
That I'm not laughing at you. I'm appalled by you. I'm shocked
yes.
by you.
That
I'm
doctor
shocked.
That
I'm
called.
I'm not laughing
that
at
doctor.
You. I'm shocked by you.
That emergency room orderly that called me...
He was an emergency room physician.
He was a guy with a bucket and a pair of funny-looking loafers.
Have you...
That
what are you?
After
you're
he, after
guy,
his, after he butchered
some
up someone.
You're publishing information that's telling people that there's some justification for not trying to do whatever you can do to save a life.
Someday
whether it's an ugly
people
dog.
Will remember the work that I did. Someday people will know my name.
Yeah, you and Hitler...
Yeah,
I've
you and Adolf Hitler.
I've never gone into a radio show before, and I've been so upset and appalled by people, but you have taken me to the brink.
Babby,
and Phil, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
So she's telling me, oh, okay, so we let an ugly dog get away with it.
Get away with what? Thank you very much for your call, ma'am.
877-87,
thank you. 877-876-PHIL. We got to take a break. Dr. Ron Tarner, our guest on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I'm an volcano surrounded by ants. We'll be back. Phil Hendry Show.
Someday they'll remember my name.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Just asking, what is the name of it again?
You can see my work is published, Phil, at the National Journal of Resource Psychology.
And that links all of the sites?
It links all the universities, yes. And again, to the lady that I just spoke to, and to the so-called emergency room physician that I spoke with, get yourself a computer, and then hit that little button that says click here, and it'll tell you, I don't know. You're going to probably have to hire somebody to show you how to do it.
Don't be condescending like that.
I'm being condescending after the kind of grief that I've taken in my industry from the ants, as I've said, that have...
I understand the ants that have drug your work down. Here is Elmer in Albuquerque. Elmer, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, Mr. Henry. I'd like to first
yes,
off
sir.
By saying hello to your guest as well.
Good evening to you.
Excuse me, sir?
I said good evening to you.
Oh, good evening. I don't know. I have a few questions for you. First of all, I just want to ask you, if you could get away with this once, is twice better? Will that increase your lifespan more?
That is a very good question. And since this is a once-in-a-billion opportunity, I don't know that it would ever present itself more than once.
May I interject? It's actually not a once-in-a-lifetime. Actually, it's not a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, sir. I was in Iraq.
I can assure you that they've only told us that they were able to do this one time.
Right, sir. I'd like to interject and add something that
I was
in Iraq. And I had many times where I could have probably got away with it and killed a lot of people. So if that was the case...
Were they laying in the road? Excuse me, let me finish.
If that was the case, then I would probably have lived forever. Well, I mean, that's how I'm understanding what you're saying. I mean,
No, you're misunderstanding me.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, you were in Iraq and you were driving a bus? I don't understand how...
He was a soldier.
Sir, I was a soldier. What I'm saying is that I had plenty of opportunities.
Were you driving a subway?
I had plenty of opportunities to kill somebody, you know, fruitlessly kill somebody.
But were you driving a truck or riding a subway?
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Tonight I want to turn to a personal note, if I may, and address a matter that has raised some curiosity.
The blood. Seeing blood coming from everywhere.
And you have to understand, Father Alexios is very small in stature. He's not a big man.
Hey, stay in your car! Stay in your car! Stay in your car! Stay in your car!
Blah, blah, blah.
Don't condescend to me!
World-famous Phil Hendry show every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that uses reality as its bitch. On this program, man, you know, you can have an opinion. You can just see what's going on this program. The Alice in Wonderland of talk radio, we take you right through the looking glass of reality. A happy Veterans Day to our veterans, to their families, to their friends, and to all of us who admire and respect and love our veterans as our comrades in this democratic push. As I shouldn't use the word comrade, it sounds commie.
Yeah, it does, man. What?
All right. In any event, that's how I see them. And a happy Veterans Day to all of you. World famous Phil Hendry show here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. You can access our show online if you are not within screaming distance of one of our affiliates. We've got affiliates all over the country. We're adding them each and every day. But for whatever reason, if you'd like to go online and listen to our live streaming audio, you can do it at philhendryshow.com. And if you're a person who enjoys watching, you know, as well as listening, you can watch. I mean, the show's on video right now, and you can see us in our studio here as we conduct this radio show. It's all there at philhendryshow.com. Among the many stories having to do with our military today, of course, the one that stands out the most is the one having to do with this man who opened fire at Fort Hood, this major, this psychiatrist who is alive and is being waterboarded. I'm kidding, probably not, but, you know, I wish.
Yeah, we can only hope.
Nonetheless, he is alive, and Hassan apparently is in the news today. He didn't formally ask to leave the military, according to the Army, so that's of some significance. Now, later on in the program, we're also going to be talking about a new game called Call to Duty. Some people are referring to it in the colloquial sense as Call to Duty 4, but its actual name is Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. It contains extremely, extremely, extremely graphic scenes of terrorist violence. We'll play the audio for you later in the program, and we'll also describe what you're going to be seeing, but essentially it's a group of supposed Russian terrorists opening fire on a security line of people taking their shoes off, waiting to go through security at an airport, and they come in with automatic weapons and begin killing everybody in sight. This is a video game that's out right now, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, And we're going to talk about that. Father James McQuarters will join us with a very interesting look at the latest conversation going on in the Vatican having to do with life on other planets. But first on our program this evening, first up is Dr. Jim Sadler. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Sadler this evening about the story of Major Nidal M. Hassan and how this horrific, horrific occurrence, this violence began, the motivations, the, you know, all of these conversations having to do with why he did what he did. We're going to be talking with Dr. Sadler tonight about that, and we have him on the line from San Diego, California. Dr. Sadler, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on your program this evening.
Can you tell me about this Hassan, this Nidal M. Hassan, who is a psychiatrist? You yourself, you're a doctor. What could possibly, beyond his religion, beyond the fact that he was a Muslim, what possibly could have motivated this?
I don't know what that might be. I don't think it would be anything of significance, given the fact that he was a psychiatrist, and therefore would be motivated, I think, primarily from a healthy perspective. So we have to turn to his religion. We have no other alternative.
All right. Then speaking in terms of his religion, this was strictly a man exercising some kind of jihadist view, some sort of some jihadist action that is given in his mind and in the minds of some is given support in the Quran?
I wouldn't look at it from that standpoint, Phil. I think what we do in science is we look for the obvious connections. We know, for instance, that there were these very offensive cartoons that appeared in the media 3 years ago of the Prophet Muhammad. They were so offensive that they caused countless thousands in the Middle East to resort to violence because they had no alternative, and these cartoons were pulled subsequently from major publications in Europe and the United States. That's according to the reports that I've received. However, were all of them pulled from the major publications? Did some of them leak through? Did some of them slip through the cracks? This is a question that I have that I think is very serious. We know that the filmmaker in the Netherlands who was planning on producing a film that was critical of Islam, we know that he was subsequently shot and killed. That doesn't mean that the film did not make it into circulation. These steps, however well intended, must be thorough. They must adhere strictly to what is required, and the steps must be taken with haste and as I said, very thoroughly. Were they, or was there just a lip service paid to the sensitivities of the Muslim people? If any of these cartoons made their way into a publication in Fort Hood, then obviously the media in this country dropped the ball, and dropped the ball very seriously.
There are those that would argue freedom of press. There are those that would argue the freedom of speech. So when you talk about the Muhammad cartoons, and you talk about the film that I believe this was the Theo van Gogh, who is a descendant of Vincent van Gogh, was planning this film critical of Islam. What of freedom of the press? What of freedom of speech?
What of freedom of the press? What of freedom of speech? These are questions, Mr. Henry, that have been asked and answered. We have freedom of the press. We have freedom of speech. We also have a reality of some billions and billions and billions and millions and millions of Muslims who understand, and that's all well and good about the freedom of speech and the freedom of the press, but they required that we remove these cartoons, and we responded. So yes, there's freedom of press, and there's freedom of speech, and there's freedom of the press. but there's also the requirement of those who have made their case very forcefully that you can... There's an old saying, Phil, and I hope I don't offend you. There's an old saying that we used to use in the Navy, and it goes like this: don't pee down my back and tell me it's raining. So when you talk about freedom of press, the average Muslim is going to say to you something along those lines: don't pee down my back and tell me it's raining.
Well, I don't understand that. In our country, we have the freedom of speech and press to the extent where we can satirize Muhammad.
Well, do what you want. Do whatever you want. But issue was given, notice was given, and I think due notice was given, and I think that there was enough lead time whereby they could get these cartoons out of these newspapers and get these movies out of the movie theaters. They served notice and gave us enough lead time whereby they could have been withdrawn. I don't know if that was done as judiciously and professionally as it should have been. And if one leaked through, like I said, and made its way into a newspaper that fell into the hands of Major Hassan, somebody somewhere dropped the ball. And I think at this point, not only do we want to know the names of who the prosecuting attorneys are going to be and who the witnesses are, but who let the Muhammad cartoon into the newspaper that Major Hassan saw?
Well, we don't know that he saw a Muhammad cartoon.
No, we don't. But I'm saying, if this was provoked by the Muhammad cartoon not being completely edited out, and the gentleman you said his name was what? Van Gogh?
Theo van Gogh was a filmmaker.
Right, Theo van Gogh.
You know, he was a filmmaker in the Netherlands. He's a descendant of Vincent van Gogh, one of the world's great artists. And he was going to make a film that was critical of Islam and was murdered on the streets of Amsterdam when this film's, I guess this film's production was made public. Do you have any comment on that, sir?
I think I did comment. I said that that doesn't necessarily mean the film is not in distribution.
No, but do you have any comment on the fact that a filmmaker, a man engaged in a form of expression, was killed because of the movie he was making?
I think there was lead. If there hadn't been any lead time, in other words, if there hadn't been full notice given, it would have been...
Well, what do you mean by lead time? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I'm trying to finish my point, Phil, if I could.
But when you say lead time...
I believe there was sufficient lead time, and freedom of speech and press is great in theory, but in the real world we have to consider the feelings of everyone. I can tell you that I am a part of my avocation is I'm a weightlifter. I do an awful lot of bodybuilding. As a result, I'm in my 50s, but I'm built as if I'm, you know, a much younger man. As a result, I have a younger wife, and I'm not saying any of that to self-aggrandize. What I'm saying is that puts me at odds with a great many people in the world who think that I'm walking around as if I know how to beat people up because I've got a physique that looks like that. But I don't. But I take responsibility for that. So if I'm, as they say in the bodybuilding world, ripped, and I have a big chest, which I do, and big arms, I have to be sensitive to the fact that somebody might be afraid I'm going to beat them up. And that's not my intention. And so we have to be sensitive to the feelings of Muslims, especially when they give us full lead time and let us know that these cartoons are offensive, these movies are offensive, notice has been served. There's a good 3-month window where we can pull all of this out of the media before they can't take it anymore. And I think that's really what the Muslim world is telling us. They're telling us, get those cartoons out of the newspapers and get them out of the movie theaters before we can't take it anymore.
But we still don't know that Major Hassan saw any Muhammad cartoon that might have offended him, saw any anti-Islamic so-called film that might have offended him, or saw anything in the media that might have offended him and caused him to go on this shooting spree, if such a thing can actually cause you to go on a shooting spree.
But did you're not listening.
Sir, I'm listening to you.
No, but you heard. The Muslim world gave us full notice. They said, these things offend us, and they need to be out of the newspapers before we can't take it anymore. Now, what does that mean to you?
Well, all right. To me, it means that they're using an excuse for violence as opposed to saying that that's the cause of the violence.
And I'm saying that's very convenient for you to say. When they give you full notice and lead time, and they have set a date, for instance, okay, in 60 days we won't be able to stand this any longer, and there will be some violent action taken, I don't think you can say that they didn't give you lead time.
But I don't know that that was the, so. All right, Dr. Jim Sadler is with us. We do have to take a break. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Jim Sadler talking to us about Major Nidal M. Hassan. Did he see one of the Muhammad cartoons? Did he see a film that was offensive to Muslims? Much of these portrayals in the media, these depictions and so forth, have been the subject of a great deal of controversy. And there are some, not all, but some Muslims who've even said they are insightful. Is it possible that this man's violence was the result of an insightful image in the media against Islam, for instance, the Muhammad cartoon? We are a country that practices free speech and freedom of the press. And so when he says they gave us lead time, it doesn't necessarily mean we don't publish cartoons. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here with Dr. Jim Sadler on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Can I get a little cup of water? Just a little cup of water.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL as we talk here with Dr. Jim Sadler about Major Nidal M. Hassan. One comment or question, Doctor, before we get to some phone calls, 877-876-PHIL. You mentioned during the break that the Chris Matthews report.
Oh, I'm glad you reminded me. Chris Matthews made a very good point on Fox News when he asked the question, is it illegal to contact Al-Qaeda? Is it illegal to call up Al-Qaeda? No, it is not. And I can't believe we're having this conversation.
Well, it's not illegal to call up Al-Qaeda, but it would make you the subject of police suspicion, wouldn't it?
Is it illegal to... I don't know what you mean by police suspicion.
Al-Qaeda is an organization of terrorists that the FBI is looking at, and certainly their leadership is wanted actively. So wouldn't that make you the target of police suspicion?
All I'm saying is... that these things are provocative. I place a phone call to Al-Qaeda for reasons that maybe have nothing to do with blowing up an airplane. Then what is the police doing provoking me by telling me that they're going to listen in? That's my point.
877, all right, 877-876-PHIL is the number. We'll go to a phone call here. Robert, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Dr. Sadler, you're completely off. Just because a group of people are mad over a movie or a thought doesn't make it right to sit there and cut up a guy in the middle of the street. I mean, that's ridiculous. Every time I see a Muslim woman in this country wearing that thing on her head that just seems like a repressive type deal to me, I want to rip it off. I think it's ridiculous, but I don't do it out of respect.
I didn't say it was right.
Behavior.
I didn't say it was right. I said it provokes the Muslims. Look, they gave us lead time on this.
So what? Big deal. So what? Lead time.
Well,
so basically, if I threaten you in any kind of way and tell you that, look, Dr. Sadler, you got to change your opinions in 30 days, or I'm going to fly up to wherever it is you are and smack you on the head, that's you're going to say, I got lead time.
Well, I don't know what you're referring to. I'm saying that the Muslim cartoons and some of these movies, when they said to us, you are provoking us to the point where we can't take it anymore, and we're going to give you I don't know if they gave us 30 days or 60 days. I didn't read the reports.
What did they give us a time? What do you mean they? Who gave us a time?
I'm simply saying they gave us fair warning.
Fair warning for what? Oh, change our opinions or else?
No, to remove these Muhammad cartoons and these cartoons of Muhammad water skiing and all of this nonsense. And
what you're saying is like the equivalent of us, of the U.S. government saying, Al Jazeera, you've got to stop reporting certain stories or we're just going to bomb your headquarters in Qatar. We're giving you lead time, man, so, you know, it's cool. We're just going to bomb you and, get over it.
That doesn't make any sense.
America's not a religion. Their lead time... because we can't put their cartoons in our newspapers, it's completely just, that's completely acceptable.
Well, let me ask you something. I'll put it to you another way, sir. At what point would you say that somebody's just begging for it when you give them lead time and you say, after this point, we ain't going to be able to stand it anymore?
Say that again?
What I'm saying to the gentleman on the phone, at what point are you asking for it? And I'm wondering if we're just begging for it with these Muhammad cartoons.
You said that you even said yourself that the Muhammad cartoons were voluntarily removed from major American publications.
I don't know that for sure.
Well, I know the New York Times, every major news outlet in America refused to publish them for the very reasons that you're giving. Now, what are you saying? You're saying one of them leaked through?
One of them might have leaked through, in which case we've got a lot to answer for. Because they gave us lead time, which this gentleman's laughing about, and we still let one get through? I don't understand that.
I do. We print whatever we feel like in this country, and we don't have to put up with it. What anybody else wants to...
Right.
Anybody thinks,
and we're not, and we're not begging for it?
But they want to put on it.
We're not begging for it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler.
Phil Hendry.
I mean, we're asking for it.
That's very interesting. Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. All right, Dr. Jim Sadler joins us, and you asked a very good question during the break. You said, did I not have the Muhammad cartoon on my website?
Yes, and you did at one point have those Muhammad cartoons on your website, did you not?
I did.
But you took those cartoons down. Why?
I was directed to take those cartoons down by the company I worked for.
And so one could say that not only did you take the cartoons down, but you took... something else down, you know.
No, I don't know.
Well, to use a very crude terminology, you took your shorts down for the corporate interest.
No. We're talking about, I did because I was told to do something. I had no choice, okay? I'm just asking you, do we take all of these cartoons down, all of these movies down?
We have to be sensitive to the feelings of the Muslims. And if it means we have to push aside... I'm not saying that we get rid of free speech, but if we could tone it down. Otherwise, it's like we're standing there begging for it. And I think with the lead time that I mentioned...
You're talking about lead time and begging for it, Dr. Sadler, and all of these things. These are terms used, I think, by people who act out of fear. Here is Denise on the Phil Hendry Show. Denise, you're on with Dr. Jim Sadler as we talk here about Colonel Hassan. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask your guest a question first. Is your guest an American citizen?
Dr. Sadler?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question, ma'am?
Sure. Are you an American citizen?
Yes, I am. I don't know what that has to do with it. Yes, it is most certainly a yes.
Okay. And are you aware of
what that has to do?
Are you aware of what your country, the United States of America, was founded on?
Well, we were founded on a number of things.
That's correct.
First of all, we were founded on the rights of the colonies to...
Simple yes or no.
You know,
good.
Turkey, to Turkey Farm.
To make well, what sure you, that you're aware.
We were founded on the Calvinist religious teachings of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. Is that what you're speaking of?
The lady is obviously referring to the American Charter, the Constitution.
Oh, well, she didn't say that. Now, there are a number of things that we're founded on, Mr. Henry. We are founded on religious tolerance. We're founded on the rights of states. We're founded on federalism. We are founded on... I could go on and on. So I don't know what specifically
she's talking
about.
Because we all know what we're founded on. And I guess my question to you
is, do you
disagree...
On the idea of 13 colonies. That was something we were founded on.
Okay, repeat your question, ma'am, because he was talking.
Do you agree...
Oh, I don't get to talk?
...freedom of press?
I agree with freedom of press, except you're not allowed to yell fire in a crowded theater. So,
I'm not sure
you
I understand your analogies.
Do you understand what you can't publish anything...
Well, you're talking about speech, Doctor.
It doesn't matter. You can't publish anything that's injurious to the public welfare. I can't go on and publish in a newspaper that the theater's on fire. Everybody get out.
Wait a minute. How do you publish that in a newspaper?
Well, but you know what I'm saying. I can't yell it. You're not allowed to yell in a newspaper or anywhere that the theater's on fire because you would cause a stampede, and that would be against public safety. And so, no, there are limits to speech. Now, in a paper that I wrote last year for the University of San Diego, I articulated very clearly these points, and yet I'm still having to answer the same tired questions, and I'm just wondering when it ends. And this, again, goes to the point of how much am I supposed to take? You see what I'm saying? Go ahead.
I am very offended by the comments you have made, Doctor, that I feel are in direct opposition to what the country is founded on. However, I do understand that you have the right to have these opinions. I will also tell you that I believe what happened at Fort Hood was an act of treason. I also believe that no matter what you have to say, there is no justification for what happened. And if you do something I don't like, and I go out and shoot you, that's a crime. Okay?
There's no question that the law has been transgressed in some way. But I am wondering, who broke the law? Was it the major or was it the United States for letting the Muhammad cartoons? You see what I mean when I say how much are they supposed to take before they can't take it anymore?
What does that mean? How much are they supposed to take?
Oh my God. Where did you get this from?
Mr. Henry, you're talking over the lady. She was asking me a question.
I'll ask a question. I'll let Denise. How much more are they supposed to take? What does that mean?
When they gave us lead time and said, look, these cartoons offend our religion, so get them out of the newspapers and let's get it going. And we did. We might not have gotten them out of all the newspapers. That's all I'm saying.
And if we did, so what? That does not
give
anyone...
We may not have, which means that Major Nassan, or Major, I don't know his name, Hassan, he might have... Look, freedom of press is fine and good, but what's more important is tolerance. Tolerance of the different religions and everything that they say. You know?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. You talk
in circles. You know
what
I'm saying? Ma'am?
You talk in circles.
She's there, and listen to what she's saying. You're talking in circles.
I'm talking in circles.
You're talking in circles. I believe that you...
I'm a global citizen.
That we, you know, you're probably the same kind of person who says,
I go global.
She's wearing a short skirt, she asked to get raped, okay? The fault is
not... Would you send your daughter out in a little tiny skirt that showed everything? No, you wouldn't. Why? She may have the right, but you as a mother recognize that she can't go out looking like that. You can't walk into restaurants looking like that and expect to get a good seat. Or to have anyone respect your right to order or anything else.
You know, it's funny. I don't look at big men and think that they are going to beat me. You seem to have...
Well, maybe you should start. I don't know.
Ideas.
What do you mean she should start?
I don't know what... She's bringing her private, her sexual taste into this, and I'm not interested in that at all. I'm interested in...
She's not bringing her sexual taste into anything.
Then what does she mean by getting beaten?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Is the female caller there? Is the female caller there?
The female caller is here.
Yes. What did you mean by getting beaten by a big guy? Is that...
Well, you mentioned earlier...
Sexual...
You mentioned earlier in your conversation that based on your build,
right.
You make the assumption that people will fear you. I
do yes,
say,
and
I
they often
totally
do. But I wouldn't
crazy.
Beat a I wouldn't beat a woman up. If you saw me, the likelihood is you'd be attracted to me. Okay, because of my build.
Until you opened your mouth.
Well, okay.
I'm sorry. I need to.
But I just like they can't. You might not be able to take it anymore.
All right, look.
You do
I
not
appreciate it very much.
Intelligence.
Yes.
And,
Denise, thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Will, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
But the record show, you hung up on her.
No, I did not.
Well, she was still talking, Mr. Hendry.
Will, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
I'm going to quote Austin there. I'm going to quote Ace Ventura to start off. Fiction can be fun, but I prefer the reference section. First off, Major Hassan Nadal.
I didn't hear what the man said.
What did you say, Will? You said fiction can be fun, but you prefer... Okay.
I prefer the reference section. First off, I'm a veteran. And
oh, isn't that nice?
First off, I'm a veteran. We'll say happy Veterans Day to all the veterans still out there listening. The man was a major in the U.S. Army. Regardless of what might have incited him, what he may have read... To get to the rank of major in the U.S. Army, you have to be somewhat squared away and understand right from wrong. And to say that anything...
Well, who promoted him? Who promoted him to major? Somebody promoted him to major, and
okay.
That's somebody else I'd like to talk to. See? So
I'll agree with you there, but...
Well, there you go.
The fact of the matter...
See? So you do see where I'm making sense.
Let this man make his statement, please.
What I'm getting at is
with all due respect, I'm a doctor.
Okay, doctor.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying you're a veteran, but I'm a doctor. I think there's a little bit more credibility coming from me.
All right, go ahead, Will, and make your statement, sir.
The fact of the matter is, I mean, I don't care if page one had a very derogatory cartoon of Muhammad. There's nothing and no way that justifies by any smidgen him, you know, the train of thought that this justified the man going in there and doing that. And the fact that
it might have lent to it, that's all.
No way. I mean, that's saying on the same token that because as a Christian American, I'm offended by what these Muslims have done, so... It's okay if I go out and blow up a mosque, and then
well,
do you
let me
think
ask
the
you
paper...
This.
No, let me finish.
Well, it's not the same thing. That's not the same thing.
Okay, doctor, go ahead. Go ahead, walk on. Go ahead.
You're talking all over this man who is trying to call in. He is a veteran. It is Veterans Day.
Well, he might be saying he's a veteran so he can get everybody to let him
whatever,
talk.
Dude.
All right.
Dude.
Well, I mean, you say, well, okay, dude.
Go ahead, doctor. Go ahead, doctor.
I'll let you know. No, go ahead, dude. No, dude, you go ahead, dude.
Thank you.
I'll talk. First of all, what you said, Dr. Sadler.
No, I don't want to hear you talk. I'd rather hear him talk than hear you talk. Because he's a veteran, you're a doctor. I mean, I'm a doctor, he's a veteran, you're a talk show host. And of all the people on this earth that have the least amount of credibility, it's you guys. Would you agree with that, Mr. Hendry?
You know what? I would, yes. But the fact of the matter is that this man is saying, if you say to someone, you should stop doing that, or I'm going to act violently, that doesn't put the onus on that person to stop doing that thing. It puts the onus on the rest of us to arm ourselves and get ready for a hostile and weird person.
If I'm in my backyard, and this gentleman, Will, is in his backyard, watering his lawn and doing something that's irritating me, and I say to him, you got to stop, I'm giving you lead time, there's a point where I won't be able to take it no more. What do you think is the intelligent thing for him to do?
Well, I mean, I hope you wouldn't jump over my fence and shoot me.
No,
I mean,
I'm not
the proper thing is somebody educated as a major.
Don't even answer the question. It's a stupid question. It's a ridiculous question. Thank you, Will, for your call. I'm going to take a break. 877-876-PHIL. As we're talking here with Dr. Jim Sadler about the. You know something, man, I don't care what provokes who or how or when. We've gotten to a point in this society now where we got to stop and make sure that there isn't anything provocative, because the provocative things, that's the reason why we have violence. You see, if there were guns and there's no guns, then there's no violence. If we have TV shows, no violence. This, no violence. That, no violence. And if we don't say the wrong word, then we won't have to suffer violence from the Muslims. If we don't say the wrong word, we won't have to have the Christians jumping down our throats. And if we don't say the wrong word, then we won't have the Republicans on us. Don't say the wrong word, then the Democrats won't be on us. And let's just all shut up and stay in our house and don't say the wrong thing, and we're all going to be safe.
What about the guest?
What do you mean, what about the guest?
Well, you're talking. I'd rather hear from him.
Will you shut up and let me get into the break? 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here with Dr. Jim Sadler. And why this major opened fire on these folks? Did he happen to see one of the Muhammad cartoons? Did something slip through the cracks? Did he see an anti-Muslim movie? We must know. And somebody's got to get called on the carpet for it. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And back with more of your phone calls for Dr. Jim Sadler, 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Sadler, you mentioned to me during our break that you are on my side. Tell me what that means.
Well, I think it's clear that you've misrepresented. I think you've misunderstood me. I am not here as a sort of advocate for Muslims. I'm on your side. I'm on the side of your callers. What I'm trying to do is give you practical guidelines on how to deal with a group of people who have shown themselves to be hypersensitive to a great deal of stimulus and alleged provocation. If you make, you know what's going to happen if you publish some Muhammad cartoon or a woman doesn't wear a burqa or she doesn't have the scarf on her head. A lot of these Muslims, they'll go wild all over you. And you have got to understand what you're dealing with. I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you. I'm here to tell you that you're dealing with a powder keg. And you've got to do something. It's almost like throwing red meat to a vicious animal.
Well, now you're going in the opposite direction and offending Muslims.
Well, that's the world we live in, isn't it? I can't say boo without somebody getting their feelings hurt. I'm trying to tell you, if you keep it up with the things that you say about Muslims in this society, they're going to go wild all over you. And that is a very regrettable...
Caller, we have on the line here Frank. Frank, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler. Go ahead, sir.
Dr. Sadler, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What provocated 9/11? You're saying the man probably saw Muslim cartoons offending Muhammad, and he went off and took out a bunch of people. You know, we don't always publicize everything. The society is word of mouth. You're saying it's publicism. There's people that talk bad about them everywhere you go, and I don't see people getting killed everywhere I go.
Well, that's true. But you've got a certain type of Muslim, they'll go off on you at the drop of a hat. You know that. And
well,
so
Muslim is a Muslim.
Let me ask you something.
They all believe the same thing.
Do you light up a cigarette when you're standing in a fireworks bin? No.
I do.
I don't think you do. You light up cigarettes when you then you deserve to get burned, don't you?
This country has given me plenty of freedom, and I'm going to take advantage of every single one of them.
All right, and if you get cooked alive by the fireworks, then it's your fault.
That was my choice.
Well, this is my point exactly.
there was this choice to look
there
at.
And you say, you know, this guy's wearing a beanie on his head, or he's a raghead or some deal like that, the next thing you know, they'll go wild all over you. And that's what I'm trying to prevent.
Oh, that does. I don't buy that. I don't buy that.
What do you mean you don't buy it?
It sounds to me that I don't buy that at all. You know, at what point do you stop being afraid of the bully and you go ahead and walk down the street, even if the bully is standing on the corner, and you engage that person?
So you want to take the chance of getting your ass beat. Why?
Because that street belongs to me, too, not just that bully. And we have to take these people on sometimes. We have to say to them, this is how life is. If you don't like it, you can move. If you do, then you stay here and you live the way we want you to live.
All right. And so a long time ago,
it was said, America, love it or leave it. You know, there's a lot of things that go on in this country.
What does that mean?
Fine.
I don't understand that. America, love it or leave it. What does that mean?
It means if you love it, love it. If you leave it...
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
If you're not happy with what's going on here, then go join your Muslim brothers across the sea and pray with them.
All right, well, okay, so, and Frank, let me ask you, on the 4th of July, where are you going to be? Because I got to watch this. This is going to be great.
Watch what?
This guy just said he'll light a cigarette around a bunch of fireworks. I can't wait to see that.
How do you think I light my fireworks? I light a cigarette, I take the cigarette, I light my fireworks.
Right, and then you light up. So the fireworks go up, and then Frank goes up.
You think I'm going to stick around long enough to get burned?
Well, that's what you just said. You light the fireworks and... Oh, forget it. All I know is I'm going to bring my video camera, and that's going up on KimSadler.com, Frank, cooking, while the kids are enjoying their sparklers.
Well, you're welcome to San Antonio, Texas.
All right, well, can't wait to see you. Frank, thanks so much for your call, and Dr. Sadler, thank you for joining us on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show this evening. Talking about this major, you know, and at some point I think we have to look at this and call it what it is. It's terrorism, but it's also a mentally unstable individual engaged in violence. And so what is terrorism? Mentally unstable people engaged in a kind of violence that has no relationship to the political cause. It has no relationship at all to the philosophy of the person that they espouse. It has nothing to do with anything in the real world. It's political, and it's nuts. 877-876-PHIL is a world fit. What?
No, I can't let you get away with that.
Will you hang up on this guy?
No, I can't let you...
877-876-PHIL. When I tell you to hang up on a guy, hang up on him.
Well, He insisted to get that I put him on the air.
I don't care, man. I'm the guy that runs. Coming up, it's Jeff Dowder to discuss Call of Duty 4. Call of Duty 4, which is engaging a lot of people in a heated conversation. 877-876-PHIL. Twitter.com, Phil Hendry Show, to follow along with us on Twitter.
Phil Hendry.
Phil Hendry Show tonight. We have with us Dr. Sam Vaknin. Dr. Vaknin is a self-proclaimed psychopath. He is the author of a book called Malignant Self-Love. His field of study and his doctorate is in philosophy. He has also been featured in a recent documentary, and I'm not sure exactly when it's going to be released, called I, Psychopath. He is a convicted corporate criminal. I mean, that's, Dr. Vaknin, that's a heck of a... It's a heck of a resume, isn't it? Philosopher.
Right.
Psychopath.
Right.
Criminal. The subject of a movie.
Actually, I'm a diagnosed narcissist rather than a self-proclaimed psychopath. But I agree with you that the line between psychopathy and narcissism is very blurred.
Just for the purposes of informing my audience, Doctor, let's start out with your life. A philosopher, you're an educated man. Where are you from originally?
I was born in Israel. That makes me an Israeli, I suspect.
Okay. Where are you living now, if you don't mind me asking? Are you in Europe?
Not at all. I'm residing in Macedonia, and I've been working in the Balkans, in Russia, in the Czech Republic, in all these charming Eastern European areas since 1993.
And you're specializing now in personality disorder, but let's get to the... to this diagnosis. You say that you're self-diagnosed as a a psychopath, if we could use that word, because you have indicated there's very little distinction there between narcissist and psychopath. How did this happen that you came to realize? I don't think, I've never heard of, and I'd have to find out if there's any other individual in the world who has self-diagnosed or has become aware of their psychopathy and has gone out to try to deal with it. How did you first become aware of this?
Self-diagnosis is an oxymoron, and I did not self-diagnose. I was diagnosed. I was diagnosed twice by two psychiatrists.
Okay.
10 years apart. I did not suspect. I had no idea whatsoever that something was wrong with me. This lack of self-awareness, this defective introspection, the whole introspective apparatus of the narcissist is simply not functioning. So for the longest time, I was sure that everything was okay with me, and that's the problem was with the world. Only when I went through a series of massive personal crises, only when I hit rock bottom, I was in prison, incarcerated, I lost my first wife, I lost all my property and all my assets, and so on and so forth. And of course, I lost my reputation, my social standing, everything I had accumulated at that until that time. Only then did I realize something was wrong with me. And only then did I submit myself to mental health professionals. And they, 10 years apart, diagnosed me similarly with personality disorder.
Dr. Vechten, we have psychopaths, sadistic psychopaths, and we'll separate you from them because these are murderous psychopaths, who go all the way to the electric chair claiming that the world is what's the problem and not them. So how is it that you were able to sort of stop at some point in your life? I mean, these are guys that go to prison. These are guys that are incarcerated. The world hates them. They've been charged with heinous, vicious acts, and they go all the way to their death claiming that it isn't me. I didn't do it. It was somebody else. So how did somehow in your life this moment occur that you were able to turn that analysis back on yourself?
Freud has made a very pertinent distinction between knowledge or cognitive knowledge and insight, which is something you internalize. And insight activates psychodynamics. Insight generates change. I gained no insight. I gained cognitive knowledge of my disorder. In other words, while I talk the talk, I don't walk the walk. It's expedient for me to say that I'm to blame. It's my new persona, it's my new brand, if you wish. But I didn't really internalize, I didn't really assimilate, digest, and accept this new sort of turn of events. In my deep in my mind, not even in the unconscious, but very consciously, I still believe that something's wrong with the world. The world, people are inferior, people are stupid, people are undeserving. People are ungrateful, ingrates, and so on and so forth. People are always, always something wrong with my environment, both human and non-human. I tend to blame machines.
Can I ask you
questions?
Can I ask you let me ask you a question right now. What do you think, and be honest, that's a good question for a psychopath, I guess, be honest. What do you think of me?
What do I think of you?
Yes.
I don't think of you. You're a function, an instrument. Psychopaths tend to objectify their interlocutors and anyone else who comes into their orbit. And that includes their nearest and dearest. They strip them down to bare essences and to bare functional essences. So you are my interviewer.
And I'm able to allow you to tell your story. I'm a conduit for which you can use to communicate. Correct?
Well, yes. That's one way of putting it. Yeah, you facilitate
and forgive me
my interaction with the world.
Forgive these questions, but I think it's important. Yeah, I think it's important for people to understand what you're talking about.
There's nothing personal in that. There's no.
I'm not taking it personal.
It's absolutely an objective assessment of the world as I perceive it.
I understand it, sir. Let me ask you, are you better than me?
I don't know you enough. I have a very high IQ. I have certain achievements and accomplishments, but so do you, of course. So It's not a question of. When I say superiority, I am not talking about a tally or an inventory of achievements. I am not talking about position. I'm not talking about prestige or status or assets or whatever. I'm talking about an innate sort of trait, an innate quantity that sets us, psychopathic narcissists, apart from the great unwashed. That's all. And it's not something operational. It's not that we go around and say, you know, this guy's inferior. It's something. It's an absolutely automatic reaction. It's not something that
I hear you.
We contemplate or ponder.
No, I understand. I believe I understand. I'm not saying that I could ever understand it the way you do. But I've at least read enough about the state of mind. And I want to let my audience know we're talking to Dr. Sam Vaknin. He joins us tonight. He's a self-proclaimed psychopath and a convicted corporate criminal. He's also the author of Malignant Self-Love, Narcissism Revisited, and is the center of a documentary called I, Psychopath. So I understand as well as I can, Doctor, that you're not speaking personally with me. It's just how you are. All right, Sam, I know that, but would you prefer Doctor, or is it, it's Sam's
name?
No,
Sam, absolutely not. Call me Sam.
Okay. And you asked me to call you Sam because you realize that that's better for you in terms of making your case, right? You're not trying to befriend me or anything, correct?
No, I'm not trying to befriend you due to objective circumstances. We're far apart, we're unlikely to meet, and so on and so forth. No, I'm asking you to call me Sam because my doctorate is irrelevant to the topic of the conversation. My doctorate is in philosophy, not in psychology or anything else.
Now, Sam, you are, and I want to get into the circumstances of this, the problem in your professional career that led you to be convicted of a crime, but I wanted to ask you about your personal life. Are you currently married? I know you were married, correct?
Yes, I'm currently married to a lovely woman called...
And let me ask you about that. Do you love this woman?
Well, there is a problem in philosophy called the problem of intersubjectivity. Our inability to ascertain that what you feel and what I feel are one and the same thing. I don't know if when you feel pain and I feel pain, owing to the same reason, we actually feel the same thing. So yes, in my way, I love her, of course. But whether this is dependence, whether this is admiration of a utility, whether this is some reaction, some formative reaction, there's no way of determining this for sure.
Yeah,
I feel, I experience what I believe to be love. And I believe it to be love because I've read about it, I've talked to other people and so on, I compared experiences. It seems to me to be love, yes.
Would you lay your life down for her? Can you see an instance or a moment where you would rather it be you who died than her?
If it guaranteed me everlasting fame, glory, and admiration, probably I would.
Really?
Anything for narcissistic supply, absolutely.
I want to ask you one final question before the break, and please, I'll try and make it as clear as I can. What is the possibility that an individual, in order to gain some approbation for himself, would claim to be psychopathic because he understands all of the symptoms, articulate himself as a psychopath, but in point of fact is not?
It is easy to imitate psychopathy or narcissism. Narcissists and psychopaths are kind of automata. They are easily predictable. They are pretty rigid. Their personalities are rigid and precariously balanced. They are pretty predictable. And they are easily manipulable and very gullible, by the way. So it's easy to imitate them. And it's a vicious logical circle, it's a circular life.
Yeah.
If one goes to the extent of imitating a narcissist, isn't that in itself a narcissistic act? And if one claims to be a psychopath, wouldn't only a psychopath do that?
It's an interesting question. Except what's the end game, and what is the end result? But let's save that for our conversation after the break. We are talking to Dr. Sam Vaknin. He is a philosopher, but we're talking specifically about the fact that he is a psychopath, self-proclaimed and diagnosed, and a convicted corporate criminal. The author of Malignant Self-Love, Narcissism Revisited. I've got to get the book and read it. And the center of the film, I, Psychopath. We'll be right back with Dr. Vaknin in a moment here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, which is, in a way, a bit narcissistic, but I realize I'm kidding when I say that. We'll be back here on the Phil Hendry Show in a minute. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, back here with Dr. Sam Vaknin, a self-proclaimed psychopath. Dr. Vaknin, we were talking at the break about how a person could imitate being a psychopath because, as you said, they're gullible and predictable. And I want to ask you, and then you said that, well, isn't that in and of itself psychopathic? But what about the end result? What if, for instance, I wanted to imitate a psychopath? I went out on the talk show circuit. I did all of these interviews because I wanted to gain money to support my family. Perhaps a daughter who needs to go to school or a son that wants to have a career or so forth. In other words, there was a larger love, if you will, at work.
It's the eternal question of whether we do have an inner landscape and a series of outer manifestations which accurately represent this landscape. So if you behave as a psychopath, if you act as a psychopath, if you harm your environment as psychopaths do, if you display a lack of empathy and an absence of conscience, if you commit criminal acts, if you're antisocial, and so on and so forth, what is the difference between you and a true quote-unquote psychopath? It's the inner landscape. But how can we ascertain that this inner landscape exists? Do we have access to anyone's inner emotions, inner cognitions? No, we don't. It's a serious... Well, when we discuss the psyche, when we discuss the soul, if you wish, when we discuss the psychological makeup of people, we make a series of assumptions based solely and exclusively on their outward behaviors. So it is conduct that decides the diagnosis.
If I found you to be so fascinating, and I do... that I wanted to travel to Macedonia and I wanted to sit at your feet and learn from you, that would only increase your sense of self-aggrandizement, wouldn't it? You wouldn't really be touched by that. You wouldn't feel like, well, here's a student that, you know, wants to learn from me. You would think that it would all be about you, wouldn't it?
Narcissists are binary machines. They react to the absence or existence of narcissistic supply. Narcissistic supply is a professional term that describes adoration, admiration, adulation, attention, or being feared and being hated. These are also forms of narcissistic supply. So yes, I'm a binary machine. If you provide me with narcissistic supply, I idealize you, I value you, I cherish you, I nurture you, I manipulate you, and I maintain you. If I judge... the quality of narcissistic supply emanating from you to have deteriorated or to be at risk of vanishing, then I would instantly devalue you, discard you, humiliate you probably in the process, and then ignore you completely.
These are the two
states in which narcissists exist. There's no third state.
So if I died in the middle of our burgeoning relationship, you would simply say, okay, that source of narcissistic supply is gone. Time to look for another one or wait for one to come along, correct?
Oh, I'd be devastated, as you would be devastated if you had lost a precious asset. But I would be devastated...
An asset.
Not because you had died, but because I've lost my source of supply.
Interesting.
So I would have emotional reactions which would emulate grief, but I would be grieving for myself, not for you.
And can I ask you, Sam, you would be emulating that grief... You said emulate, so you would be feeling grief for yourself, but you would emulate grief so that others would think that you were normal?
Narcissists and psychopaths try very hard. They often fail, and they look very awkward when they do that. But they try very hard to cast their extremely deviant and unusual set of mind into socially acceptable molds.
They often do that. So you have psychopathic CEOs and psychopathic presidents and psychopathic, you know, successful people, so pillars of the community. And they are acting. Psychopaths are thespians. They're actors. They're great actors. However, it's felt that they're acting. It's somehow they're fake, and it comes true. Yeah. Not at the very beginning, but usually on second or third encounter.
I have to ask you this question. I was going to ask you about your own crime, the crimes that you committed that brought you to bottom, and perhaps I should, but I'm more interested to ask you this. You're looking at the financial state of the world, as we all are. You know what happened here in America with the Ponzi schemes and so on and so forth, and we know that psychopaths can create a lot more damage than their numbers represent. How much of this do you think is how much of what's happened to the world financially do you think has been driven by psychopaths?
Well,
in business, in the banking business.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
I've recently written an article about brokers and bankers as malignant psychopaths, as psychopathic narcissists. I'm sorry. It's a confluence. It's a culture of narcissism, to borrow from Christopher Lash. It's a culture of narcissism that encouraged, abetted, and aided the emergence and the resurgence of psychopathic narcissists. Placed them in positions of authority, adulated them, and gave them, legitimized their acts, their lack of compassion, their lack of empathy. Actually, they were idolized precisely because of their narcissism, and precisely because of their antisocial traits. It's a cultural thing rather than an individual thing. And
Sam, I want to ask you what this question. I would be fascinated to know your answer to. Do you see any individual on the modern day scene in the news that you would say, "Aha, this guy is he's a fellow traveler. He's a psychopath." Can you name a name? Would you feel comfortable doing that?
Psychopaths or narcissists, and there is distinction. I mean, narcissists are very concerned with narcissistic supply. They are concerned with input from the outside. They sustain and regulate their sense of self-worth by garnering and fostering reactions in other people. So they are dependent on other people. Psychopaths are not. Psychopaths are lone wolves. Psychopaths are highly individualistic. Psychopaths are antisocial, while narcissists are actually over-social, gregarious, if you wish. So there is this distinction. So the better question, if I may rephrase the question, the better question would be if I identify narcissists, because narcissists are more likely to become, as I said, pillars of a community, appear in the media, and so on and so forth. They are more likely to gravitate. Mm-hmm. But I raise the question and the possibility that President Barack Obama may have pronounced narcissistic traits and potentially, subject, of course, to diagnosis, interviews, and so on and so forth, may suffer from NPD. That is speculation, obviously.
Yeah.
I haven't met the man.
Well, I'll tell you.
I'm not qualified to diagnose him, even had I met him. But after 14 years of studying narcissism, I think that I gained a modicum of intuition, and based on previous cases. So that's my feeling.
It's very interesting. And I will call you doctor one final time, Dr. Sam Vackman. Thank you so much. It's really interesting, and you're an interesting guy. And your book is called Malignant Self-Love, Narcissism Revisited. Dr. Sam Vackman has been with us tonight, and thank you very much, sir,
for having me on your show.
You bet, anytime. This is the world famous, and I'm kidding. Well, actually, I think we are world famous. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Famous Phil Henry Show. Let me get on Dr. Ron Tarter from the Mountain Meadow Observatory and Jay Santos from the Citizens Auxiliary Police. One is a man who volunteers his services as a private citizen with the Citizens Auxiliary Police in Southern California. Another is an astronomer from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Colorado. But I'm very curious about this event. As odd as it sounds, it certainly has got the cops stumped. And let me start with you, Jay. 5 feet have washed up on shore in Washington State and British Columbia. These are human feet in sneakers. They know that 2 of the 5 feet belong to the same man. 1 of the feet is from a woman. And where do you even begin? I theorized that it was my just a theory that these were hikers, people who had been hiking the rough coast up there and fell in.
Well, it's certainly one that would have law enforcement stumped. I mean, as a Citizens Auxiliary Police, you know, our job mostly is take a peek over the shoulder of police. We're a volunteer police AG, right about that, Phil. And we also, of course, you know, we're not the kind of people who are going to tell the police what to do. We're not the kind of law enforcement that would interfere in another jurisdiction. It would be very hard for me to tell a police officer what he should be looking for in a situation like this. All we can do is oversee the operation on behalf of citizens of any municipality or jurisdiction, make sure that they're not bungling the case. And we certainly have no reason to believe the police would bungle it, but by the same token, we would want to make sure that they're not going to bungle it. And so if you could give me a little more information on that, what they have found, where they're headed in investigation, I could tell you probably where they're going wrong, something like that.
All right, so in other words, you would need a little more background on the case. Have you heard of the case?
Only the bits and pieces I heard on your program this evening. I think I did read something in a magazine article I was reading last week. I saw a magazine article about it.
You saw in what, like a weekly magazine?
I'm not sure what kind of magazine it was. I was reading a magazine in my dentist's office, and I saw a story in there about feet that had been found. And I was on my way in to get some medical, you know, dental procedure, and I was reading a magazine that he had laying there on a
coffee table.
Well, it wasn't really a coffee table. It was a It was more like I don't know what you call it.
End table or something like that? It doesn't make any difference what it was laying on.
Well, right, it was like an end table, I know it was a coffee table.
Phil, it's Rod Todd earlier. Could I make a point here? Thank you for inviting me on the program.
Ron, how are you?
I'm good. Mr. Santos, you and I met about 2 months ago at a restaurant. I don't know if you remember or not.
I do not. And well, by the way, Citizens Auxiliary Police, I'm Brigadier Admiral, and I do appreciate it.
You're a Brigadier?
I'm a Brigadier Admiral.
Brigadier Admiral with the Citizens Auxiliary Police?
That's correct, yeah.
Oh, yes, sir. Admiral Santos, you and I met at a restaurant not too long ago. Do you remember?
I do not remember, no.
Well, I was having a private conversation with my wife, and you were sitting at a booth opposite us, and you were actively trying to listen to what it was I was saying, and when I finally confronted you...
Oh, yeah, I remember. You and BJ?
Did I want to what?
No, you want what you want. Were you in a restaurant called BJ?
What were you doing, Jay?
It was a terror alert, and I think we had an orange level, and what we do a lot of times is we were listening on conversations, make sure people aren't talking about things that might cause a national situation. People are talking about just private things. Hold on for a minute.
Well, Phil, what he was doing was he was eavesdropping, and it was intrusive, and I told him that it was none of his business. And, of course, he then told me that he was with this club.
Well, it's not a club. It's Citizens Auxiliary Police.
Well, I wasn't sure, but I told him that he really had no right.
Well, you were overhearing this man's conversation for what reason?
He said it was for national security.
Right, it was national security to make sure that there was, you know, conversation.
Well, did you think that I was talking about blowing up a flying an airplane into a building or something?
Yeah, sir, I had no idea. It was just part of what it was we were trying to accomplish. But Mr. Henry brought me on tonight to talk about some foot that he found.
Well, no, he didn't bring you on to talk about a foot that he found. He brought you on.
It's about the feet that washed up on the shore.
Yes. About feet that washed up on shore.
I thought my understanding was you were in possession of foot, or you're not.
No, I'm not. No, this is a news story.
It's a news story, Admiral.
Brigadier Admiral is fine. I mean, I call you doctor, and I believe in the respect that is due a man who has achieved a level. You know, been up to a level.
No, that's fine. I didn't know it was Brigadier Admiral. I don't. But the story is that five human feet have been found washed up on a shore.
Right.
And Mr. Henry was speculating as to what might cause it. I know, Phil, that I could tell you your theory sounds viable, that these could be coming from people that had been hiking.
Well, as long as you're asking our opinion on this, right, Phil?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. I mean, you have shown an interest in law enforcement. Dr. Tarner is a scientist, although he's an astronomer. We thought we'd bring him on the program because he has assisted police in some forensic study.
Assisted? I don't understand. How does an astronomer assist police? Do you get a telescope out and see, look at a bedroom window or something?
I beg your pardon?
Well, I don't know how an astronomer is going to help the police.
Well, look, it doesn't make any difference. I just wanted to get opinions as to what you guys thought it might be, that's all. So you tell me, Dr. Tarner, you think my theory is viable?
I do. I think that these are human beings that obviously were in the water and with the sneakers on their feet. Why not,
Well, Phil, if I can make a point.
Go ahead, Jay.
In world law enforcement, we deal with more than just, make sense. It's got to add up. You say that two of the feet came from the same man. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And one of the feet came from a woman. That's correct, too?
Yes.
Well, we can safely assume that a man and woman fell while hiking. And I don't think you brought that up. You seem to think it was just a man fell down, another guy fell down, and different people. But what about a man and a woman who were together, and they fell down?
What was the woman? Did she have one leg?
No, I don't think she had one leg, sir, if you want to, be humorous.
No, but they only found one woman's leg.
Well, it is not unknown in our world for a man and a woman to get together in life and even get married when a man has two good, a man's got two legs and she's only got one. I think we all remember Paul McCartney and that young lady who was one-legged when he married her, and that's the way she was when they finally divorced, when she divorced him.
Yeah, I understand that. You're talking about Heather Bills?
I'm not familiar with her name.
Are you saying that you think that it was a two-legged man and his one-legged wife?
I'm saying it's not unknown. It's not unheard of. That's all I'm saying.
Well, if Paul McCartney and Heather Bills went missing and were vacationing in British Columbia, maybe that would be it. But I don't know that is.
All right, well, that's a pretty far-fetched thing. I mean, look, at the point, what about the other 2 feet?
The other 2 feet, obviously they belong to a person too. Could have been a child. So you got 2 feet, all right? You got one belongs to a woman. Two belong to a man. How many does that leave? Two. And who is that other person that belongs to? Maybe a kid that they have. See?
Well, that's fine, but they were both right feet.
Well, it could be some sort of a deformity. But the point, this is what I would look at.
Wait a minute, man. You're telling me that a guy with 2 feet and his one-legged wife fell off a cliff and their kid fell off with them, and that kid had some sort of a physical deformity because they only had 2 right feet? What is this, a joke or something?
You asked me on your program to get forensic read on this deal. That's what I'm trying to do. See, we believe in saving lives on this program.
Well, how are you saving lives, Mr. Excuse me, General?
I'm a Brigadier Admiral. I've said it once. I don't know how many times I got to beat that horse.
Admiral Santos, what are you smoking?
What am I smoking? What's your answer? You say they fell off hiking.
Well, that was Mr. Henry's.
That was my idea, and you, both of you guys, adhere to that idea, but it seems to me that you, General, or I mean, Admiral Santos.
You guys kidding around? I've said Brigadier Admiral. How many times?
Okay, we get it. You're an Admiral.
Brigadier Admiral.
Brigadier Admiral.
Brigadier Admiral Santos, you said it's a two-legged man and his one-legged wife, they fell off the cliff.
That's correct.
Okay. Now that leaves 2 feet that they don't know who those belong to. They're 2 right feet. And you automatically assume that it was their kid, and the kid was born with 2 right feet.
Well, it makes sense, Phil. It makes sense. Think about it. You're not going to find 5 feet together unless there's, unless there's a reason for them to be together.
What if the people didn't know each other? What if they come from other people? Why did you think about that? No, you don't. You're focusing on this. You don't get the overall.
Well, when you say...
No, you need to see the overall.
Look, I don't think, to be perfectly honest with you, that those feet have anything to do with each other other than those two that belong to the same guy. The fact that they only found one woman's foot does not necessarily mean that the guy was with his wife who had only one leg.
Even though about Paul McCartney.
Well, what difference does it make about Paul? What's the likelihood that a man and his one-legged wife are going to be hiking on a cliff anyway?
Good point.
Oh, yeah. What's the likelihood? You don't think Paul McCartney and Heather Mills were hiking?
Oh, come on, man. What are you married to this idea that it was a two-legged man and his one-legged wife? Because of Paul McCartney and Heather Mills?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying. You don't think they go hiking?
I'm sure they did go hiking on his property. They have such a huge estate, they probably go hiking any time they want.
Well, I don't know what that means.
The point is, maybe they went hiking, maybe they didn't go hiking. I don't know if they went hiking. But to say that because a man married a woman with one leg, then that automatically explains why there was two men's feet and one woman's foot found washed up on a beach in British Columbia is idiotic. And then on top of that, you say that the two right feet that were found was their deformed kid who had two right feet.
Mr. Henry, you asked me to give you some answers. I'm trying to come up with it. It's based upon 14 years of law enforcement experience.
Oh, it's not law enforcement experience. That's you wearing, volunteering and going around and blowing a whistle or something.
Volunteering and blowing a whistle? What are you on?
No, what are you on, man? You're the guy that runs around with a blue armband.
Right.
Well, you guys didn't know that until I told you, and again, I came on here. All right, Dr., what is your name again?
I'm Dr. Rod Tarter.
Dr. Tarter, what's your answer?
My answer is the following. I think that Phil may be onto something, but I also think that it could be medical waste.
Medical waste? Somebody just pitched these feet in the ocean?
Yes.
How come they're wearing sneakers?
They might have put the sneakers on the feet at the last minute to, as a way of, I don't know.
So in other words, a guy's got a bunch of severed feet and he puts sneakers on them and throws them in the ocean?
Well, it's,
yeah. You call me nuts. Oh boy, this guy.
Phil, I really got to get to bed.
All right, well, listen, I thank you both for being on the program with me tonight. Brigadier Admiral, thank you.
Thank you.
And Dr. Tarner? Dr. Tarner? I guess he hung up.
Yeah, he said he was going to go sleep.
Dr. Ron Tarner and Jay Santos from the Citizens Auxiliary Police on their theory about the severed feet. A two-legged man and his one-legged wife.
Yeah, don't forget the kid with the two left feet.
Two right feet. Not two left feet, two right feet.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This news report on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, former BBC Radio 1 breakfast DJ Kevin Greening died from a drug overdose after taking part in a gay bondage session. An inquest is heard. The body of the 44-year-old was found by police in a flat in Wandsworth, south of London, in December of last year. Westminster Coroner's Court heard the details in a recent hearing. Coroner Paul Knapman recorded a verdict of misadventure. Greening co-hosted Radio 1's breakfast show from 1997 to 1998 with fellow DJ Zoe Ball. Mr. Knapman said he was found dead having indulged in unorthodox sexual behavior involving restraint equipment and illegal drugs. On the day he died, he'd been a leather sling attached to the scaffolding in the bedroom of the flat occupied by his boyfriend, Sean Griffin, the inquest heard. At the time the inquest heard, Mr. Greening was still wearing a rubber suit and had cling film and gaffer tape around him. Recording his verdict, Mr. Knapman said Mr. Greening died from a mixed drugs toxicity or overdose and not being held in a... It wasn't because he had gaffer tape on. Thank you. Wild, man. That's tragic. That's a fellow broadcaster, a fellow DJ, a fellow talk guy, a fellow guy who uses his mouth. Well, I shouldn't say uses. I mean, a guy that talks with his mouth. Found Man, what a way to go. Wearing a rubber suit with cling film and gaffer tape around you. Yeah, that's rough.
Woo!
Man, I don't want that. I've often said I'd rather be, you know, I'd rather die with family and friends around me than to be found. You know, there's two ways you can go. There's only two ways you can go. There's only two ways you can go. Either you're found or people around you that you know are there. There's only, you know, that's the only, I don't care how you go. I don't care how, you either go with people that you know around you or you're found. You could be found under a wheelbarrow. You could be found in your own bed. You could be found in your bathtub. You could be found in your garage, maybe on the floor of your garage. Will you shut that off, bud, before I...
How about this?
You could be found with a... You could be found... It's bugging me, man. Get it out of here. You could be found with anything, but brother, let me tell you what, and you can trust me on this, if I'm found, it better not be in a rubber suit. Because if I'm in a rubber suit, I better know who put me in it, and I'll see them in hell. Just like Wyatt Earp said. You remember when Wyatt Earp said this? He said, if you find me in a rubber suit, I'll see you in hell. Hell follows behind me. Something like that. At the time of the inquest, Mr. Greening was still wearing a rubber suit and had cling film and gaffer tape around him, or at the time the inquest heard. Recording the verdict, Mr. Knappman said Mr. Greening died from a mixed drug toxicity and not from this form of bondage that we have just described to you all. Mr. Griffin told the inquest he'd become concerned about Mr. Greening when he noticed that his face was pale and the area around his mouth was gray. Mr. Griffin had initially been arrested on suspicion of murder, but was later released without charge when the circumstances of Mr. Greening's death had become clear. The owner of the store that sold the rubber suit, Michelin Tires, was arrested. I'm kidding. I shouldn't joke about it. Sorry, forgive me. I didn't mean to kid about it. Will you turn that off, bud? All right, now getting back here to the news that we just thought we'd give you that late-breaking story. By the way, Mr. Greening was heard on Radio 1. He worked for BBC Radio 5 Live at the BBC World Service. He was also heard on London stations, including Jazz FM, Heart 106.2, before taking on the mid-morning show at indie broadcaster XFM. At the time of his death, Greening was a presenter, that's what they call DJs there in England, on Smooth Radio, London's Smooth Radio. I'm Kevin Greening. I'm wearing a rubber suit. Now, I shouldn't do that. And so we end another night of broadcasting. Yes, another night of fun and frivolity, ranting and raving, lunacy, some political points of view, and idiotic callers. You've been listening to The Phil Hendry Show. I got to get rid of all my gaffer tape now, all my rubber suits. They just came back from the cleaners. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It's produced by Jason Rantz. Our technical director is Ralph Rodriguez, who's playing the music underneath my nice violin music there later on.